Hey everybody, this is Albert Escobedo, your host for the Pet Peeves podcast. Just asking if you like my podcast, if you're enjoying the content and what you're listening to, become a sponsor. Find the link on the Anchor, the sponsor link on my Anchor website, and or on the SoundCloud website. Wherever you find the descriptions for these episodes, you can find the link to become a sponsor. For $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, help the podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for listening. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Pet Peeves podcast, hosted by me, comedian Albert Escobedo. I am a registered veterinary technician and not a doctor, so please consult your private veterinarian before taking my advice. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Everybody, welcome back to the Pet Peeves podcast. We have a very special guest today, Shenley Seabrook, someone I've known for a really long time. We wanted her on the podcast to talk about pet loss and pet grief from pet loss and recovery and when is a good time to talk about getting a new pet. Shenley is a licensed mental health counselor and she's going to talk to us about these topics. This is season 2, episode 1. So thank you guys for sticking around for all of season 1 and all its debauchery. So Shenley's here. We're going to have a nice conversation. Pet loss is an important topic to both of us, and I just wanted to get a professional opinion on the matter. Shenley, thank you for being here. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. Thanks for having me on finally. We've been talking about it, like you said, for about a year.
Yeah, probably more than a year. And this is just a topic that we didn't want to waste. You know, we wanted this to be a topic that's covered properly. And I think the way that we're going to edit this one and structure this one is going to get a lot more attention than it would have in the previous format of the Pet Peeves podcast. So just thank you for being patient and waiting for me to get all this together. But you're here now. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. So I, like you said, I'm a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Indiana. And I currently work, I've been doing therapy for about 15 years, primarily work with children and adolescents, but I do see some adult clients as well. So I see a lot of clients with anxiety, depression. I work with kids with behavioral issues. And then every once in a while, I have a client who maybe they don't come in to deal with a grief episode, but sort of along the way in our counseling journey, they may have something come up where we address that.
Absolutely. I was going to ask that and then you said it. So I'm sure, you know, you have a client for a while, a grief, and that's going to come up. People have losses
it's
in their
inevitable.
Life. Right. And what about children? Have you had that conversation with children specifically about pets? I'm just curious. Has it ever come up?
You know, the only time it's ever come up is for us personally.
Sure.
So
that's better for this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, my husband, Josh, and I are foster parents as well. And we had a little girl who we fostered. She was 8 at the time. And we had a pet loss. So talking with her about that.
This is why Shen is on the show. Shen and I have known each other for probably 20 years. If more than that, right? I probably met Shen when I was about 8 or 9 or 10. So that was like almost 30 years ago. Jesus.
I know. I can't believe it either. But yeah, I think it was pretty close after you guys moved to this area.
So that was 1991 when we moved to Maryville. That's a long time ago. So Shenley is friends with my older brother, Jaime, and I was friends with Shenley's younger brother, Nick. And Nick and I were best friends for, you know, 2 decades before growing into adults and moving into our real lives. And Shenley and my brother are still very close, and we all keep in touch with the family. We were just talking about her brother Nick was married last November, and my brother was there. So Shenley being on the podcast is a long time coming for those reasons, and because I've known that she was doing therapy and a mental health counselor for a long time, so she'd be a really great guest for this. And then Shenley experienced some pet loss recently, so that's what we wanted to talk about, specifically what happened with Jack.
Yes. So we had Jack, we adopted him from the Humane Society. He was already 3.
He's a dog, just for clarity, everybody.
Yes, he's a dog. We believe he was a purebred Staffordshire Terrier. Can't be sure, but at least that's what we were told. And so he lived with us for about 7 years. And he, you know, before we had our babies, he was our baby. He was with us through a lot.
Yeah, I've met Jack.
Really, really tough.
Like Shen said, Jack was with him for a long time. My sister Angela used to live with Shenley, and I went to visit, and I've met Jack. So just a family member dog is the description here. A dog that's been there through all of it, from before the kids to during the kids, through the foster kids. Shenley also fosters. So all that brought Jack really close to their lives, and that's where the story begins.
Yes.
And then he got sick. What happened?
It did. So we started noticing about 6 months ago that he seemed to just not have as much energy. He wasn't really eating as much. He wasn't, you know, running around as much. And so we ended up taking him into the vet, and they ran a lot of different tests and told us that they thought they were pretty sure that he had stomach cancer. So they found some masses, and they said, you know, he probably had a good 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So that was really, really difficult to hear. And he, like I said, he was only 10. We felt like that was still pretty young.
Yeah.
For a dog of his size. And he ended up, you know, he stayed with us for another few months. So
did he end
that
up
was great.
Passing on his own, you know, or did you guys end up euthanizing?
No. So after that few months, it got to the point where he wasn't eating at all. He was having a lot of digestive issues. He was having trouble getting up and moving around. And he was the type of dog where, you know, as soon as he heard that garage door open, he was up and running to the door and so excited to see us every single time. And it got to the point where we would come in and he wouldn't even get up off of his bed.
Wow. So sad.
So we knew at that point that he was in a lot of pain, and we made the appointment to take him in, and we kind of knew, I think, that that was probably going to be the last appointment,
right?
That they would put him down at that appointment. And my husband ended up having to go on his own. I had something come up that day and I couldn't go with, even though I wanted to.
Sure.
So that was really, really difficult for him because, you know, that was his best friend.
Yeah.
For so long.
Yeah. Josh put a lot of work into that dog. Yeah. Josh, yes. Shenley's husband, has also been a friend of mine since middle school, something like that. I've known her husband. And I know it's really hard on him. He loved that dog. He asked me for a lot of advice about Jack. And that's just, it's sad. But I also want to mention that a 10-year-old dog, regardless of size, is an old dog. They're very, very prone to cancer at that age.
Right.
Pretty much all dogs, but especially a purebred or dogs that have some purebred in them. But pretty much all dogs at 10, they're a candidate. They're a candidate for something critical, something that's not going to get better, that you can manage, but not necessarily going to be able to cure. So that's something that I think people should be aware of. If you get a pet, dog, cat, doesn't matter the breed or size, once they hit 10, like, you should really start paying attention to their veterinary care. And even before that, 7 is when we start considering them seniors for a reason. Like, in veterinary medicine, they're considered a senior at 7 years old. Regardless, you see my cat in the back?
I see.
Jump up there?
Yep.
So that's something that I always worry about, that, you know, once my dog is now 6, and so I'm already worried about her. I experience constant anxiety just knowing that she's almost a senior, and what comes with that territory. So I just hope people are aware of that. And, you know, Shenley, another thing we talked about, we've known each other for so long that I remember Shenley's other dogs that have passed, or her family's dogs. And
right.
Bud and Dude and now Jack. And I don't think there was any in between, were there?
No, we had 2 cats. We had Rusty and Otis.
Oh, yes. The basement kitties.
Yeah, who've since been, they passed a while ago.
Wow, I forgot about them.
I had in college. Yeah, and then Otis, my sister had. And they both ended up coming here to stay
with mom
with
and dad.
My parents. Yeah, for a while. We were both living places that didn't allow pets.
Right.
So my parents graciously took both cats in. And
so it goes.
Yeah.
So growing up, we had Simba and she was hit by a car. Right. She died. You guys were there when we were experiencing that. That was really hard for us.
Horrible.
Yes. And then I had my dog Chewy. I don't know if you remember Chewy. I have his photo here for everybody.
Yeah, I remember Chewy.
And we have his little paw print here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the same thing for Jack.
We have the little lock of his tail hair here that we keep with us. I wanted to show on the podcast today, but just that we care a lot about our pets. And then even after they pass, that we still care about them. I remember your parents had the urns above the fireplace. Yes. Are they still there?
They are.
I'm sure. And so that's something that, you know, I don't think everybody understands, but how hard pet loss could be when you have a pet that's such a close part of your family. So how did you guys deal with, is your, being in your profession, do you think you handled the pet loss differently than you would have otherwise?
No.
You think it's all the same?
Not necessarily. I mean, no, it's interesting because I'm familiar with the stages of grief, and on a logical level, I could kind of recognize, okay, we're probably in this stage right now and we're likely to move to this stage next and, you know, so on. But the reality is when you're in the middle of that grief, it's overwhelming.
It takes control. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. I can't compose myself. What's hard is being in the profession where I have to watch other people go through it and maintain my composure. That's difficult, and I'm better at it now than I used to be, which might make me seem cold-hearted, but in reality, it's just what the people need to see: confidence and stability. They don't want to see me crying and losing my shit. Like, that's not professional. Nobody's going to trust me to help them if I'm in that condition. And maybe they would see me as compassionate, but I'd rather be seen as professional in general.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and I think there's probably a balance too.
There is.
That can be found.
There is, because of the what you say and how you say it, and it's not contrived. Do you know?
Right.
It's all right. There's kids around. This is the Pet Peeves podcast. We like kids and animals. You know, if my dog starts barking, what am I going to do?
Oh yeah, that was our 3-year-old just came to say hi.
Hello. How's it going? Welcome to the podcast. If this goes viral, you'll be a part of it.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think you know, going through the stages is something, like you said, it's been labeled because it happens naturally, right? What are the stages? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so I mean, from everything that I've studied, there's a book, it's called On Death and Dying, and that's where the 5 stages of grief come from. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I believe, is the author of that book. And so you have the 5 stages of grief. You have denial, you have anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. And there's some people who believe there's 7 stages of grief. So there are a couple of stages after that, but most people are familiar with the 5-stage model.
Right.
It seems to be the most popular and seems to kind of fit what
makes sense
most
to people
experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking at this book right now, On Death and Dying, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and yes, denial, yes, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance.
Right, and those stages look different for everybody.
Sure.
And they're also different, and I, you know, we talked about this a little bit before, people experiencing them differently based on how the death occurs.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a sudden loss, you're going to experience the stages differently than if it is more of an expected loss.
That makes a lot of sense. What do you think is, so is it a length of time per stage? Is that what changes?
Yeah. So in a sudden loss, people tend to experience the stages in rapid succession. So you go from denial to anger to bargaining pretty quickly. And you kind of fly through those first couple stages because you're just trying to process everything that just happened. And shock tends to be part of that, especially if it's, like you said, you know, like you lost, you know, Simba to a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
That is a shocking situation. It's something that you would not have expected.
Right.
So you are you know, the denial and the shock, I think, probably sets in first. And then you go pretty quickly to anger. And then very quickly to bargaining, which usually sounds like, if we would have only, right? If we would have only had the gate shut, if we would have only grabbed him quicker,
right?
If we would have only whatever.
Yeah.
And then I think once reality sets in and the shock wears off, that tends to be when the depression hits. And you get through that, and that length of time varies depending on the person. And then finally you move into the acceptance stage.
Yeah. Wow. I was reliving the whole Simba thing and it happened so fast. Like I was, right. I found out she got hit by a car and that she was hurt or dead and I didn't believe it. And then I found out it was true and I was very upset with whoever wasn't there. I was mad at everybody. And then right. I remember with the next part, like who left the gate open, who was supposed to be home, who, but she ended up jumping out of the window. She had pushed the screen out of the window. So you get mm-hmm. through the bargaining part because you realize it was nobody's fault. It was, right. it was her fault. She jumped out of the window. And then the depression part, we all cried. And then acceptance, we buried her in the backyard and we, you know, we got another dog a few years later. Actually, no, I didn't get another dog for a long time, but mm-hmm. I remember it because she had gotten out so many times, you know what I mean? She had gotten out so many times. It was almost like inevitable and almost right. like a relief, almost, because all those times she got out was so stressful. And all those times she got out was such a problem for the family, you know?
Right. Like you would chase her around the neighborhood and you would be looking for her.
Right. And she got pregnant a bunch stressful. Of times, remember? Because we were horrible yes. pet owners when I was a kid. I didn't know anything about being a pet owner.
And well, you live and learn, right?
Yes. And then I didn't get another dog for a long time. So that's the next part of this mm-hmm. that we wanted to talk about. So when you guys had the issue with Jack and it was over months long period, do you think yes. that you start to accept the inevitable? Like how soon do you think you start going through acceptance before it actually happens?
So what's interesting is it was different for me than it was for my husband.
Okay.
So Jack was very much Josh's dog. That was his baby. That was his best friend. They bonded almost immediately when we got Jack from the shelter. It took Jack a long time to warm up to me.
Really?
Yes. To the point where there were times where, you know, he would be sitting with Josh on the couch and I would go to sit next to him. And Jack would have a hard time with that. So we had to deal with that. We brought in, you know, behavioral experts and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So it took a while. So for Josh, he knew what was going on with Jack's health, but he kept saying things like, but he's only 10, but he should have so much longer, but they say a month, but he's strong. It'll probably be, you know, 6 months, maybe even a year. And even up until the day that we decided to take him in, he was saying, maybe they can just give him another medicine. Wow. Maybe they can give him a new dog food. Maybe, you know, and so for him, that bargaining and that denial, he jumped back and forth.
Wow.
There for a while, even before Jack passed.
Wow. That's hard.
So whereas for me, it was a little bit different. I feel like I was a little bit more just realistic about the situation. You know, he's sick. He's sick and he's hurting and he is unhappy. And, you know, I trusted our vet, our clinic, who we love and they're amazing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't think either of us were ready for any of that.
Right.
But I think I definitely accepted it sooner than he did.
That's very interesting. I'm thinking because I've seen so many animals passing for one reason or another, if it's something like probable cancer, stomach cancer, and having a bunch of digestive issues, and they're, you know, they no longer have the energy, the quality of life that we talk about that they used to have. I would not think my dog is going to get better, because it just doesn't go that way. Like, every once in a while, you'll see the miracle. Every once in a while. But even that miracle isn't very long-lived. It's a short-lived miracle. So I often see people get their hopes up, and that seems more shattering to me than just the inevitability of a disease running its course that we can track and we monitor and we know we've dealt with before. Medicine is not new. And, you know, so I can predict a lot for people, but if people keep believing in the miracle, then it's harder for me to give them good advice or what to expect or what to look forward to. If they want to throw the kitchen sink at it and try all the newest, you know, medicines and procedures, like I get it. If you have the means and you want to throw the kitchen sink at it, great, go for it. But that might not make any difference whatsoever. And you might just drag along that disease and drag your animal through chemo and drag your animal through force feedings and all the things that I think, if you've never actually done it, you don't understand what it's like to force an animal to eat, to force an animal to take medication, to force an animal, like a dog or a cat, like a really good dog, a really good cat that's just sick and old and dying, and you're making it take medicine that, yes, it'll make it live a little bit longer, but is that really what's best for the animal? And I go through periods of anger and denial and bargaining and all that when I'm with the patient. Like, I'm angry for them. I'm accepting for them. I'm in denial for them. I'm angry for them in different scenarios. But when it all comes down to it, quality of life is everything. Quality of life is the end decision, and no one can decide that except for that pet owner. Like, that's it. The pet owner knows the pet better than me. I'll never know this pet as well as you. I refuse to make that decision for people, and it's not my job. Neither is it the DVMs, the doctors, is not our job. All we can do is support people's decision. You know, if you want to euthanize, I support you. If you don't want to euthanize, I will support you. I'm not going to tell you not to. What I will tell you is quality of life. If your dog is having more bad days than good days, it's time. If your cat is having more bad days than good days, it's time. And if you want to drag that out, I understand. I'm a bleeding heart too, but it might get worse for you. So don't do that to yourself, and don't do that to your kids, and don't do that to other people in your life just because you're super attached. It's not necessarily the right thing to do. So I just hope people seek out advice from, you know, counselors or veterinary professionals or real professionals. That's where I think you're going to get the best advice. Veterinarians who've been doing it their whole lives, do it over and over again. There are specific euthanasia veterinarians that's all they do. So they're very good at it. They know exactly how to do it the best way, the smoothest way. They'll come to your house and do it in your living room. So there's a ton of options for people. I just hope that they explore them all. And so what about the more sudden loss versus the more chronic long-term loss? Do you think that there's a better or worse way to handle those things?
Yeah, so we've experienced both in our pet owner journeys. We had our daughter, who's 3, had decided about a year ago that she really wanted to get a kitten. And we had said no for a while, and then we finally just said, okay, we'll go and, you know, pick one out. And she found this adorable little black kitten that she just fell in love with. And we had that cat for only 2 months before it was just a sudden accident. And I actually had to run in and pick up the cat, and it died as I was holding him. So it died in my arms. And when I tell you, I don't remember a time I've cried as hard as the day that happened. And I held that cat as it stopped breathing. And again, we had the cat for 2 months, you know? So of course we were just starting the process of kind of attaching, bonding, getting to know its little personality and accepting having this other, you know, little creature as a part of our family. And it was, I think, the shock of that experience and the stress of that experience, it was completely different than the situation with Jack, where we knew that he was sick. We knew that he wasn't going to get better. And we knew that there was going to come a day where we were going to have to make a decision. Either he was going to pass on his own in his sleep, or we were going to have to take them in. So it's just, it's a completely different situation. You know, where you kind of go through the stages in a different way. And I think it's important for people to remember, when you think of the stages of grief, a lot of people think that it happens, you know, it's linear. It happens like you go denial for a couple of days, then your anger for a few days, then bargaining for a few days, then depression for a few days or weeks or however long. And then you get to acceptance. And that's not always the case. Sometimes it tends to be more like a roller coaster, where you're in one stage for a while, then you go to a different stage and you kind of loop back to the previous stage. You know, there's no right way to grieve. There's no normal or typical way to grieve. Just because we have this idea of these outline stages doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it's going to go for everybody.
Absolutely. I try to consider a couple of things, but I was thinking right now, every time I've lost a pet, I knew I was going to get another pet. And I just was thinking now that what I've learned from my previous pets, I'm using on my current pet. So that's the other thing I wanted to talk to you about. When is a good time to move on to the next pet? Do you think it should be longer or shorter based on how the previous pet passed away, or same, or is it case by case?
I think it's absolutely case by case. So I think everyone is different when it comes to this type of decision. I had a friend recently who, she lost her cat who she had for 21 years. So that cat was with her from her, you know, first marriage to a divorce to she adopted 4 children during all of those years. That cat went through so much with her and then, you know, passed away and just natural causes, old age and that sort of thing. So she sort of expected it. And I fully expected, after talking with her about the experience and just listening to her and listening to her stories and trying to help her through her grief, I expected her to wait months before getting a new pet. And a few weeks later, she sent me a picture of their new puppy. So when I asked her and I said, you know, I'm a little bit surprised that you wanted to get a new pet so soon. I know how difficult it was when you lost your cat. And she said, we just felt like this was the right time. And this puppy has brought us so much joy. And, you know, it just made sense. So I don't think there's any perfect amount of time to wait. For some people, they may want to get a new pet right away. I think it's just important to take a look at your reasoning. Why do you want to get, if you do want to get a new pet pretty soon after the loss, are you getting that pet or adopting that pet to kind of fill the void? Or is it because you're really ready to have a new, you know, part of your family?
Absolutely. I think from my standpoint, I usually would tell somebody to hold off for a little while, because you need some time to do some proper research on your next pet. I understand the situation might come where someone throws a puppy on your doorstep and you got to make a decision right then and there. You run across a kitten in the gutter and you got to make a decision right then and there. But that's not typically the situation. People are like going out to the pet store and to the shelter to adopt a new pet right after they've lost a pet. And I think maybe you should probably hold off on that decision and think about it, do some breed research, you know, maybe make sure your finances are in order before you get another pet and things like that. So just that. I think people should put some... There's the cat's automatic pet feeder. Is she jumping down? Yep, there she goes. Because if she eats too much at once, she throws up. So I have to do it on a feeder that does a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
Because if I just fill the bowl, she eats it all too quick and pukes. So anyway, that's Pebbles, the kitty.
Aww.
But yeah, just that. Don't move on too fast. Do some research, especially if you want to get a dog or a cat. They're not all the same. So like if you have not, this is what I think. Some people don't have a lot of pet experience. They just don't. So they've had like their one pet for 20 years or whatever, or 15 years, and then it dies. And then they want to get another one thinking the next one's going to be like their previous one. And it usually isn't. Like even if you get the same breed, it's not necessarily going to have the same personality. Sometimes they do, and you might get lucky. But not always. Mm-hmm. And then you get people who are like, oh, this dog, my last dog never had any problems. Now this one has all these problems. I'm like, yeah, well, what'd you think? Is it going to be reincarnated day of? Like those things got to cook too.
Right.
And you know, that's just conversations I've had with people. And some people have really good experiences getting a new pet right away. And some people have really bad experiences getting a pet right away. So if I had to say to play it safe, don't get a new pet right away. Because you could have a bad experience. And what you don't want is to have that bad experience during this grief that you're experiencing. And now you're going to take out some of that anger on your new pet if you have all these unrealistic expectations. Because not all pets are perfect. You could adopt a dog or a cat and they're amazing. They're perfect. They do everything on their first try. That's not normal. A lot of pets have issues. They have behavior issues. They have medical issues. And if you have no patience for that sort of thing because your previous pet was perfect, you've just set yourself up for a lot of trouble. So think about things like that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Or if you have no patience because you're still going through the grief cycle and you're just not ready. So I agree. I think, it's probably best to wait a little while. But like you said, sometimes the pet just gets dropped in your lap. And we actually got our dog Hershey, who's just turned 7. He was quite literally dropped on our doorstep by a local police officer who basically rescued him from a dog fighting ring and was calling around and online saying who can take this dog for the night, because it was a Sunday. And there were no shelters open nowhere where they could take the dog. And somebody reached out to us and asked if we could take this dog for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 7 years ago. So, yeah.
I think that you guys are qualified to do that, and like myself, if I were to lose a pet, I'm qualified to take on another pet right away because I have realistic expectations of pets. And, there's a lot of people like me out there, a lot of animal professionals or just animal lovers that one pet dies and they got another pet the next day and they're going to keep doing that for their whole life because that's what they do. And I'm one of those people. I'm going to have pets my whole life, no matter how many of them get sick, die, or good or bad or healthy, unhealthy. I'm going to keep helping them because I don't have a choice. It's just my life. That's where I've positioned myself. And at work, that's all I do is I just help sick animals, sick cats all day, every day. And it's just second nature for me. So my experience with pet loss is it never ends, really. Like I relive the losses in my head over and over and over again because I'm always dealing with sick animals and I just don't want to make the same mistakes over and over again. So I use them as learning opportunities 100% of the time, even my own pets. Like what went wrong? How could I have done it better? How could I have been more educated to experience less of those negative stages? And if I can educate these current pet owners or cat fosters or whoever I'm working with, then they'll have less of the anger, of the grief, of the depression. They'll have less of those things because I've prepped them. I've made their expectations realistic. So I know I can help people with that. And with this podcast episode itself, I guarantee we can help a few people get through these stages a little smoother. And I want people to get more pets. If you love animals and you want a pet, I want you to have them. I want you to have them, but I don't want you to have them for the wrong reasons. And I don't want you to be ill-prepared. And I don't want those animals ending up in a shelter or on the street because you weren't ready.
Exactly.
So that's my end goal. My end goal is less animals in shelters, less animals on the street, less people with a bad relationship with their pet. That's just super sad. Everything is fixable. Those things are fixable or at least manageable. So I don't know. That's my opinion. And I think the other thing I wanted to mention is working in veterinary medicine is hard because I have my hands on a dead animal all the time. Like you were saying, the animal died in your hands, your little kitty, and how that made you feel. That happens to me all the time. I'm doing CPR on kitties that don't make it, and it affects me in a different type of way. But I don't ever I don't think I dwell on it in a negative way. I think that I like that I tried. I like that I tried. I like that I know how to do it and that there is a chance that I can perform a miracle. It's a small chance, but the chance exists. And then you see the other people that work with me that see me attempting, then they know that there's a point to those attempts and to learning those techniques and to knowing that there's always a chance. There's always a chance until a certain point. But before that, there's a chance, like you were saying with Josh, there might be a medicine, there might be a new cure, there might be a, you know, something coming out of another country that we just don't know about.
Right.
And, you know, that's why you got to do research, and you got to read the journal articles and do your continuing education. And you never know. Modern medicine is pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I'm sure the families that, you know, the animals that you take care of, they appreciate that you're trying, you know, and you can tell them, honestly, look, I feel like we did everything we could.
Right. Right. And that's a true statement, and that the other people on your team see that as a true statement. And, and I just think about all the times I've seen veterinarians doing CPR on a pet for like way after a time that makes sense. You know, we're way after everybody else is like, you know, we can't do much more. But you see those doctors that are just like, nope, I'm going to keep trying. And every once in a while, the animal comes back. And maybe in my 15, almost 20 years of veterinary experience, I've seen it 4 or 5 times. But that's enough for me to believe that it could happen.
Exactly.
That's enough.
And those 4 or 5 times make it so that you want to try every time.
I want to be the one. I want to do it. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to be, the one of the times. I've not yet. It's always been doctors. But one of the times it'll be me. That's what I'm looking forward to. And, you know, and just thank you for being here. I think this was a great, great episode, great conversation. So before we go, is there anything you're promoting? Anything you want us to post on our social media?
Yeah, so I actually, in the last year, I wrote a children's book, and it's called We Have the Same Heart. Right now, it is a Kindle or ebook, but I'm in the process of having it printed. So it's going to be a children's board book. And I'm very excited about that. I actually co-wrote the book with a young girl who was adopted through the foster care system. So it's just a really neat project that we've been working on. So we have a Facebook page and Instagram page if anyone wants to check that out.
No, We Have the Same Heart. Is it about foster care and adoption life?
So it's a children's book, and it just sort of shows a diverse family and a diverse community members, and just how everybody, you know, we might not look the same, but at the end of the day, we all have the same heart. So
that's awesome.
That's the theme of the book. Yeah,
that's awesome. I'm so glad we got to squeeze that in. So everybody check that out. We have the same heart on Kindle as an ebook. Everybody has Kindle these days, I think. So look for that. And it's on Instagram. We have the same heart. So you guys check that out. Thank you, Shanley, for being here once again. It was great to have you.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome back to the Pet Peeves Podcast. We have another very special guest today, a longtime friend, fellow comedian, fellow dog and animal lover, Brian Blank. How's it going, Brian?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. We've been trying to do this for a long time. You know that. I know that. And one of the main reasons is because of your dog, Lucy, that you brought with you everywhere. And anyone who knows you knows about Lucy. You're one of the best comedian pet owners I ever met. That brought your dog everywhere, talked about your dog a lot. You know, it's just real obvious that you guys had a real special bond and that it was more important to you than a lot of other things going on in your life. And me as a veterinary professional, everybody should know I'm the vet tech. You know, I noticed a difference in the way you and Lucy were and a lot of other people with their pets. So I want to say I respect you and I'm happy that Lucy has such a great life. But as we know, she recently passed. What happened with Lucy?
Thank you for all that, by the way. I'm gonna try not to cry too much.
For sure, man. No, this is it's all right, man. I want you to feel comfortable, but I know you love that dog, so it's totally, totally expected.
Yeah, Lucy was I moved 10 times in 8 years, in 6 cities and 4 states with that dog. Her 1-year anniversary was just the 25th, September 25th of when she passed away.
So that was 6 days ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, she was towards the end. It was like taking care of your child, your best friend, and your grandparent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I bet. That's a great analogy. And that's how it felt to me. Like you were taking care of your best friend and you were doing more than enough. You were going above and beyond for her. And the amount of dedication you had to her in those last couple of days, but you were still doing stand up and you were still like pursuing your life and your dreams. So you were doing both and juggling both. And I just want to know, for all the people out there that are, you know, with a older pet, you know, a senior pet, and they're in that long-term game, any advice for them? Anything that they should look forward to?
It's the most rewarding. I've said that I feel like I loved old Lucy harder. I miss prime Lucy the most, if sure. That makes
sense. Absolutely.
But I think I know I loved old Lucy harder, because I mean, and she had a few stuff that happened when she passed when she was 13 and a half. And she had like a seizure when she was 9 and a few heart issues and stuff. And I guess I saw that she was like, she gave me 3 extra years. You know what I mean? Like she gave me 3 extra years. So I owed it to her to do whatever I could. And you know what I mean? And make her want to live, I guess, for lack
of. And those times I met her, she was a happy dog. I mean, I know she had her issues and you were having a hard time getting her to eat. But she was still a happy dog. She was still alert. She was still aware. And she was still happy to be here, I think.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, that was, like you were telling me, a while after she had some issues. So she was a trooper for a while. And she wasn't a small dog. So she was probably in her prime, like, I don't know, 80-pound dog. What do you think? 70-pound dog?
Yeah, yeah. The most she weighed was like 72 pounds. She was a... She was a Redbone Coonhound Anatolian Shepherd Lab mix.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. She was a big, pretty dog.
They need to make more.
We'll have to put that in the description. Maybe they'll make more Lucy's out there.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, I think what we had talked about in the other segment, like what's harder, if you say you have a dog for like a year and you got it when it was 3 months old as a puppy, and then when it's a year old, some tragedy happened, it gets hit by a car. Is that a harder loss than a dog that lived 13 years? And I think, you know, that's a question that is unfair to ask people. But in the podcast, you know, I'm glad it comes up and people get to have those kind of discussions and make those kinds of decisions for themselves. But I would say it's definitely harder for the dog that you bonded with over 8 moves and 5 states or whatever. And through, you know, most of your adult youth, your young adulthood.
She was my 21st birthday present.
Wow. Yes. So
my first year as an adult without her.
That's hard. That's hard. But I mean, you guys had those beautiful years, those beautiful experiences. And I don't know. I think that it's worth it, you know, from my perspective, to know that people are out there, they're going to see their dogs through those senior years. And another thing we talked about in the other segment is 10 years old is old for a dog. Yeah. Any breed, any age, any size, that's old. So when they break that 10-year mark, you know, it's problems are going to start. That's when the problems usually start. And what ended up happening with her? Was it a at home thing, or did you end up taking her in to get put down?
She had some issues eating, so she was on prescription food. She was taking like 4 or 5 pills, different pills for like her heart and for food. her last 6 months. And the last year and a half, I kind of took it 6 months by 6 months of like, I'm going to try to get you to six. I'm going to try to get you to this. I'm going to try to get you to that. In the last 6 months, I could kind of just tell. And then I the last couple months, I started looking into, you know,
what to do next.
Yeah. Cause I didn't want to come home. The last few months were scary.
Sure.
I didn't want to come home and have her just be gone.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to be there. I wanted, you know what I mean? And, yeah. And then I remember like 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks before when I was like, all right, I got to make the call now. When we were, I was taking her for a walk and then she always stopped on grass. She just loves like stopping on grass, but she's like was stopping and looking at me a little weird. And she didn't like, she gracefully collapsed.
Wow.
And it wasn't like she faint, like she wasn't having a seizure or anything. She just kind of like, not, and that was when I was like, all right, that I don't want this to
get worse.
Yeah. So that's when I was like, all right, I got to schedule it for 2 weeks from now.
Wow. You know? Well, I always tell people it's the right decision to make if the person who loves the pet the most made the decision. I mm-hmm. never would question it. Because in my experience, if you care about your dog, it's the hardest decision in the world to make. So if you've made that decision, it's the right decision. Because most people wait and wait and wait. And what I hate to see is people wait too long. Because they want to do it. They know it's the right thing. They just wait a little too long. And then it ends up being worse. So I think that everybody who makes that decision, anybody who's listening to this, it's a hard decision, but it's the right decision. And we should always back you guys up. But I know it's a hard decision and it never goes away. As opposed to like the two dogs I've had in my life. One got hit by a car and died. Super devastating. The other one had cancer and had to be euthanized. Super devastating. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I had more years with the one that ended up getting the cancer. And I'm glad that all the family got to be there for the euthanasia and got to say proper goodbyes and, you know, take it slower. You know, we got to actually experience the emotions in a normal amount of time, as opposed to the dog that got hit by a car and died. We experienced a bunch of emotions in like a night. Yeah, that was something more traumatizing for sure. More traumatizing. But also, like, you know, I miss the dog that I had longer more. The dog that I had for the 13 years, I miss more than the dog I had for 5 years.
Yeah. You bond more. You have more experiences. Yeah,
that was my little buddy.
I took Lucy on almost all my tours. You know what I mean? She was, and especially when I lived in San Francisco, I brought her everywhere.
Right. That's awesome.
Lucy has passed out in more bars than I have.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Anybody out there curious, look up Brian Blank and you'll see all the pictures of Lucy. If you go check out Facebook, you'll see a video where I was giving Lucy vitamin B injections, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so there's some footage of me working with Lucy about a year ago, I guess, or a year and a half. It was like in the heart of the pandemic. Remember? Yeah. My building manager didn't want people coming inside, so we had to film in outside in the yard. But yeah, that's I met you a long time ago, but I knew about Lucy from the beginning. And then I saw you at Tortugo with Lucy. And I think that's when I really started to notice your guys' connection and that everybody who knew you would ask about Lucy. And that was just like Brian and Lucy. So that's beautiful. So that's, you know, the hard part is what you already went through. So what about now? Do you think about getting a new dog?
I want to get a Lucy tattoo first.
Okay.
And I thought it would be like 2 to 3 years before I even thought of getting one. But I am a dog person.
You think it's inevitable?
Yeah, I definitely want one.
How did you end up with Lucy? You said it was a birthday present.
She was my 21st birthday present, but that it was me like, I want a dog. And so like me and my mom went to, and also in Denver, they need to change the name of the shelters out there.
Why?
The shelters are called the Denver Dumb Friends League.
What?
I got at the Denver Dumb Friends League. And when I moved
Denver to Dumb Friends League?
Yeah.
Okay. And when
to Portland, I was at a dog park and I was like, where's your guys' Dumb Friends League at? And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I never heard of that. That sounds like a not the best choice for name. Man's best friend, but your dumb friend.
It was, I think it was established in the 50s. It was a different time period. But
yeah, we'll give them a pass.
When they're just used to it. So yeah, I got Lucy at the Denver Dumb Friends League.
Sorry for that, Lucy. Sorry about that. Because I always think about like the story when people usually get a dog is like random. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted a dog, so I went to go get one. So then the next time, now that you've had this experience, you'll probably get another dog, but from a different circumstance. Like, what do you think? You'd end up going to a pet store? Do you think like you find a stray in the street? What are you picturing?
I tell people to get whatever kind of dog they want to get a mix of it.
Oh, yeah. It's a great advice.
I'm a big dog person. The only small dog that I kind of like, and they're not small, are corgis.
Okay.
So I kind of want a corgi husky mix.
No shit. Okay. I could picture that.
They're super cool looking.
Oh, I've seen them.
I'm going to try to go to like a corgi rescue and see what they got.
Okay. Those exist. I'm sure people love corgis. I'm a corgi fan just because they're smart dog. I never had a problem with a corgi. That's how I judge breeds. I work with a lot of breeds and I never had a problem with a corgi. They're usually pretty good. So I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the breed. But that's all, man. I just wanted to get your perspective. I know that it's a hard topic. So thank you. Thank you for being open and giving us your perspective and view on this. And I always want comedians to know, you know, that you should probably have a pet if you can. You know, I think that it's really good for artists to have pets, even if it's like a goldfish, whatever, just something to care about that's not you. And all those long nights of trying to chase your dreams, you need something to come home to that's happy every time. You know?
Dogs are absolute best. Lucy was the most supportive person.
Your biggest fan?
My life. And I mean, thank you for having me, because anytime I can talk about Lucy, I will.
Yeah, this is immortalized. We're going to put out the episode. You can listen back. And when you get that Lucy tattoo, send it to us so we can put it on the Instagram.
Most definitely will.
That's awesome, man. So I'm going to let you go. Anything you want to plug? Any shows coming up or anything you're producing?
Yeah, absolutely, actually. So I'm going to at Third Wheel on October 23rd, Saturday at 8, Done Goofed.
Okay.
Eventbrite link up on my Instagram soon. And then also, I'm going to ask you live on air, do you want to do Cowabunga on October 26th, Tuesday?
October 26th is a Tuesday. I could do that. Fuck yeah, for sure. Thank you. Cowabunga, Tortugo, Inglewood.
October 26th and Done Goofed, October 23rd at Third Wheel.
Third Wheel, and that's in Hollywood or something, right? On Santa Monica, and then Tortugo over here in Inglewood. So yeah, we'll put those shows in the description. You guys go check those out. That's going to be a fun show for us. Come to Inglewood. And that's it, man. Thank you for being here. Thank you guys for listening. Pet Peeves Podcast. Check out the next episode. Take it easy, dude.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
For sure.